everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Becky.
And Leah. Hi, Leah.
Hi, Becky.
Merry early Christmas to everybody. We are...
Merry early Christmas.
3 days from the big day.
We are.
Yeah. Do you have all your presents wrapped? I mean, we don't really have... I mean, do you and Jeremy trade presents?
We do stocking stuffers. That's okay. It, really. So I don't have a lot of presents to do. So, but I did actually get everything together today.
Okay. Well, good for you. We don't wrap for each other. I bought Michael a KitchenAid. I get bread. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, we had to buy one this year, but that's because ours broke in the middle of him making like sausage. So It was like I had to order delivery from Target like that day. He's like, I need it like right now. I was like, okay.
I did get a new dryer for Christmas, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Adulting is the worst sometimes.
Adulting is the worst. No, Jen Ellen, Mike is not making sourdough. Nope.
But why?
He makes a Polish ferment that's a pre-ferment for your bread that sits for 24 hours and is supposed to give the same texture and taste as sourdough without all the work.
I would love to bake sourdough, but I feel like it just takes too much time and effort to keep your starter like alive and healthy.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Once you get it going, it's less work, but it takes a little bit to get it there. So yeah.
Amanda, Jeremy has a sourdough starter, right?
He does. Yeah.
He makes his own pasta too. So
yeah, I mean, he makes a lot of stuff from scratch, but yeah, he does bread all the time, but he does the Polish method too when he's just making like regular bread. But yeah, he's got a sourdough starter that he got in, I think like 2019 or something from like a local restaurant, and he kind of mixed it with another one. And so he's got like this hybrid thing going that's been going for years now.
Well, Heather said she killed hers.
Yeah. I sent some, she asked me if I would send her some. So he like dried it out for her and like we mailed it up there and she killed it.
Nice. Michael made homemade cinnamon rolls this morning. I had homemade cinnamon rolls this morning. So I
made pancakes.
Look at you. Okay. Totally randomness. Have you seen Dad and Mom chats on the TikTok? Do you know who they are? I know Amanda doesn't do TikTok.
I love them. I laugh so hard.
They're this very awkward young family, mom and dad. But her current hobby is her griddle and making pancakes.
Well, not since the road trip.
Yeah.
But she was making pancakes all hours of the day. Every day. At one point she like was sitting on the couch with it because he had made a comment about how she couldn't make pancakes all the time everywhere. She's like, watch me. Hi, Delta James.
Hi, Delta James.
Hello.
I'm so excited. I love pancakes, but I don't know that I love pancakes that much. And actually, since I found the DeWaffle Baker frozen pancakes at Walmart and the Walmart knockoffs, I don't make pancakes anymore. They're in the freezer. You can have them.
Yeah, I don't like a freezer pancake, but that's just me. But so my girl had her birthday sleepover, and so I made the girls pancakes this morning. So
how many little children, all of the age of 9, 10?
It was 3 to start out with. One ended up going home, and so it was just the two of them. But it was no joke, 5 hours of screaming and laughing. They had a grand time. Michael and I did not have a grand time. The boy child was off on his own at a birthday sleepover of his own. Not his birthday, but a friend's birthday. So it worked out perfectly because he did not have to listen to the yelling and the screaming and the laughing for 5 hours. He was warhammering.
There we go. That's a video game for people that don't know.
It's not a video game. It's a tabletop game.
Oh, I think it's also a video game,
but it's a tabletop game where it's like, I like to say it's a mix between D&D and Risk, but I get told that that's wrong, but it's the easiest way to explain it.
The only thing I know about that is that Henry Cavill plays it. That's all I know.
Oh, well.
Well, there you go.
Okay, so random.
Sorry, we're off.
We're so off on it, but Amanda, have you seen the new Superman trailer, the teaser for the new Superman movie?
Yes. I saw a like a part of it. I didn't see the whole thing. I need to go watch the whole thing.
It looks really good, and
It
it has kind
does.
of that Christopher Reeves
It
vibe as
does.
Superman.
Like the old school Superman, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm yeah, I think that'll be interesting. So
I'm
I'm excited about
excited.
it.
I'm excited to see Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane.
Yeah.
I really enjoy her as an actress, so.
Same. Okay, so that is this none of this is our topic for tonight. Not one of these things that we've discussed are a great segue into what we actually plan to talk about. So this is we have two episodes left in 2024. We have this week's episode, and then next week's episode will just drop in our podcast feeds. We won't have a YouTube next Sunday because, you know, holidays. So we're kind of wrapping up all the 2024 things, right? So
Yes.
as we wrap up 2024, we're diving into a fun, fiery, and maybe even a little controversial topic. We listen and we don't judge hot takes of 2024. This is the episode where we spill the tea, share our boldest opinions, and take a closer look at the books, tropes, and trends that sparked debate, inspired love, or maybe left us scratching our heads this year. From unexpected plot twists to guilty pleasure reads and everything in between, we're here to celebrate the diversity of opinions that make the romance community so special. No judgment, just passion. So grab your favorite drink, settle in, and join us as we discuss the hot takes that made 2024 unforgettable in the world of romance.
I like how she said that all with a straight face.
Right?
We listen and we don't judge.
But we're judging. No.
I mean, it wouldn't be us if we didn't judge. Right? Okay, so let's just start with the boldest statement that I can possibly make about the year of 2024 publishing. And that is, Trad Pub is being built on the back of indie authors.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not disagreeing.
And it's hard, right? Because we know that the indie market is saturated right now, right? There's so many authors
Yes.
out there. And I feel like everyone is running and chasing for space. Some books feel the same. But I also feel like indie authors are not getting their time to shine in the sun because what's happening is Trad Pub picks up these books and then act like it's always been a Trad Pub book.
Yeah.
Like the people that try to tell me that, you know, Lucy Silver was always Trad, not Lucy Silver, Elsie Silver
Elsie
was always
Silver.
Trad Pub, or Lucy Score was
Lucy
always
Score.
Trad Pub. No, they weren't. Never. I mean, Lucy Score did have her forever deal, but her readership, her fame, her everything came out of her indie author career first.
Well, and the fact that like there's this whole like need for books to be in bookstores that authors are like clamoring for, and it's like I have some issues with it.
I mean,
I mean, I get it,
you and I
but at the
don't
same
live in
time,
an urban area.
this is true.
Amanda does. So, Amanda, you have multiple Barnes Nobles, you have indie bookstores, you have Target, you have Walmart. It's probably pretty awesome to walk into your Target and see the books of authors, you know, you have seen on social media or that you've gotten to interview be right there.
Yeah, I mean, we get it some. Our target is actually it's pretty limited on what they care for romance. So they're still more into they carry more women's fiction, they carry more like thriller, they carry more, you know, those kinds of things. But yeah, I've seen a few. I think I was just there last week and I saw I think an Anna Huang and a couple others, but yeah, I mean it's cool to see, and our Barnes and Noble is getting a lot better, but yeah, we the availability is there,
Yeah.
so like we have I mean, I have a Target that's not super far. I haven't been into the Barnes and Noble for probably 10 years, but like our Target like they have a couple of these authors, but not a whole lot of them. And I mean, maybe it's just because like our Target book section is super small compared to other ones, just like based on the
Is
layout.
too, I feel like.
It's
Well,
like
one of them is, the other one's better. So,
a row of adult books and like a row of kids books. Like it's very small.
but I also think that this, I think part of the reason that we don't understand the demand for the books in bookstores, part of it is where we live. I live in a place without a book. I mean, we have a Books a Million, but it's closing. And it's not like three shelves of romance and nothing of any value. But also, I'm not a paperback reader.
Yeah, same.
I
Yeah,
read,
I'm not either.
I'm gonna read 100% on my Kindle. And so I think that that's part of what we don't get is, but there is a whole generation of people behind us. Like my kids would rather have the physical book than an e-reader. And I don't
Yeah,
understand
and
it.
my eyes just can't do it anymore. Like I sit up and read really late. I keep the lights low in my house. I can't see a paperback like that. I mean, it just doesn't work for me
Well,
feasibly, but I'm
honestly, like
also,
my
so go
old
ahead.
hands can't hold the paperback. Like my hands get cramped if I hold a paperback for too long. And yes, I know that is really showing my age, but like I can't physically hold a book for 3 or 4 hours that it takes me to read it.
And you know, we all know the struggles for indie authors trying to find their space, trying to find their readership. And I think that those mid-list indie authors that should be having their moments, even if it's a short moment, having those moments to shine are overshadowed because you have, you know, someone like Megan Quinn who has Bloom money behind her can go and afford to spend $10,000 a day on Amazon ads and keep her book at number one. You know, so when do these viral moments that everyone talks about aren't really the viral moments that you think they are.
Yeah, they're backed by like
I
publishing
mean,
money.
some like there are some where the timing just happened to hit right, and yes, it is a true viral moment, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of ad buys that happen. And it's frustrating to see that those authors who are already huge successes and making bank are the ones that are continuing to make bank because of the people that are looking and buying their rights. But there are authors that are actually much better written
Well, I think that
that are not
there's.
getting the attention they deserve.
Okay, so does anybody. Okay, so we're gonna move on to the next thing, which kind of has to do with this, but I'm gonna ask, does somebody else have a wanna? We don't listen, or we listen and we don't judge. Do you wanna share one of yours? Or if not, I'll go right to the next thing that I think.
Just go
Please.
to the next one.
Yeah, just let's just go down the list, because I think they're all on here.
So, one of the things, I don't know what you sparked in me, Leah, but.
Why is it my fault?
Because I had a thought and then I was like, well, wait, I'll save it. And then I didn't. I should have written it down. Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Another
I
thing.
listen and I don't judge.
Well, okay. Oh, here it is. I listen and I don't judge, but I think that you have to have stakes. Vibes are not enough to carry a longevity of a career or
Of a
create longevity
career.
in a story. I do not think an author can continue to write the same book with only vibes and never give us stakes over
If
and
that's
over and over
all that
again.
they do, it's not
No.
gonna stay.
I'll agree with that for like the longevity of a career, but a book here and there, like I'm not mad about it. So, I mean,
Book here and there is
I
one
get the
thing.
point, but yeah.
Yeah, a book here and there where it's just like they're writing because it's something they want to write and they do it and that's fine. But I don't think that you can sustain a career on a basic book.
I think that, you know, these people like Hannah Cohen, she's had tremendous success. She's got a Commonwealth deal. You know, she's making lots of money. She's a seven-figure author now. Great for her. Her books are all vibe. I do not believe that in a year's time, if we pick up her first book, that it is going to elicit the same feelings because the first book reads exactly like the seventh book because she hasn't changed anything up. It's all just vibes and good feelings. And I think you've got to give us stakes or your books are going to start. It's kind of a Catherine Cowell problem. She's an author that I can't binge read because her books have such a formula, and the way my brain works as I'm watching it, I've figured out the formula.
But the formula, see, with her, in that sense, the formula doesn't bug me as much because it's not the exact same characters and character issues in every book. Like, she has some variety. And so with her, no, I cannot binge.
She has variety? Give me a series that doesn't have a small town sheriff in it. That's the older brother.
So, well, I mean, but now we're getting into characters. We're not getting into, I mean, I think that's different than vibes. If you have a formula, formula is different than vibes. I think.
I agree.
So, I mean, if you have a formula, but things are still happening. She has outside forces. I mean, it may read the same series to series, but her books do not, like, I would not categorize her book as vibes.
I don't categorize her as vibes.
See, I do think her books are vibe because if you take that suspense element out, there's nothing else there. The suspense is the only thing carrying that story.
I mean, yeah.
I wouldn't say that.
If you go by that. Yeah, I mean.
Because some of those romantic suspense, we do get really great character growth. You see characters that have more than just, you know, especially like I've been reading Susan Stoker's The Refuge series. There's a lot of emotion in those. Those characters, if you take out the suspense elements, there's still big character growth, things working for them, things working against them. It's more than just vibes.
Yeah, but I don't think Catherine's are just vibes. So, I mean, we can disagree. Give our opinion on that. So, yeah.
But like they're saying in the chat, romance is in itself a formula to an extent.
Well, and that's another listen, and we don't judge. But we do judge. We do judge these freaking bitches.
Yeah, I mean, but you
the
know,
ones that push the envelopes.
What they read.
Well, but I'm talking about the ones that are pushing the envelope, that don't think romance need the HEA or the HFN.
Whatever. I'm not judging any person who says that. Whatever.
If you don't have an HEA, it is not a romance.
But nope. I'm telling you guys, on Threads every day. Yeah, every day there's some author that's like, do I really have to have an HEA or an HFN for him? Yes. Go away, you stupid whore.
I don't even count an HFN. Like, really?
I don't.
Like, I do, but I don't.
I think
it has to be the right story.
But I think for us, the majority of our HFNs are going to be higher spice.
That's true.
Yeah.
Almost erotica. And again, you know, that's something that we've talked about that's really come to light this year. And it's disappointing. But the erotic genre is disappearing. Because algorithms, searches.
People are super judgy.
It's being suppressed.
Well, and it's something like we've talked about before. It's where people want these spicy books with lots of stuff in them, but they don't want to be proud of the fact that they're reading them.
Well, that's another really good, we listen and we don't judge. Yeah. The word smut. And is that our word? Is it? I feel like
it's not our word.
Every author that sits here and says, I write smutty books, you're doing yourself a disservice. You are degrading. Like, is the guy that wrote the Penthouse Forum letters an author? Sure. Sure. And he writes smut. Do you want to be on the same level of an author as the guy who wrote the Penthouse Forum letters? Or do you want to be on the level of an author, say, Nora Roberts? Because I'm fairly certain she is not calling her book smut.
No, she's not.
She gets a little agitated about that word.
She does.
I hate but the word.
That's
smut.
The thing. Like, hate just it. Because you like, there are people who write, and like Jenny has said, When you watch a movie, if there is a sex scene, it is not classified as porn. The word smut is basically a synonym for porn.
It is. Yeah, I
Romance
mean, in
books, like there are some
erotica.
like erotica, like PWP, like
Yeah.
those types of books. Yes, those are smut. Those are porn. But 90% of the romance books that are out there are not. And you cannot take charge and take back a word
That was never ours to begin with.
that was never ours to be taken. Like, we're not changing a definition. Like, it's recorded for years in the
What
dictionary
were you going
what
to
the
say, Amanda?
definition of it is.
What were you going to
Oh no,
say?
I was just going to say, like, when I first got on Bookstagram or whatever, and I was, buying some book merch and whatever, and I have, they set out the little smutty reader stickers and whatever, and it's like, well, I didn't really, like, I just wasn't, I was like, whatever, I have them, like, I didn't do anything with them. And then it was just like, the more you think about it, and then you get into the whole discourse, like, of everybody talking about it, and it's like, I had no, like, real opinion on it to start with until I saw how, like, pervasive it was becoming, and, like, and I was just like, oh, okay, like, this is a little different, so I was like, okay, then you have to, like, sit back and think about it.
And I was watching a TikTok the other day. Kat Singleton was on, and she was marketing her book because her Black Tie series that she just sold over to Entangled, those books have 5+ chapters of a sex scene.
Yeah,
One
that's what
sex
you're
scene
saying.
is 5+
Wait,
chapters.
for one scene?
One encounter goes on for 5+ chapters. Now,
I mean,
listen, unless they're
why
using
at that
lube
point?
and things are really well prepped, I'm gonna be a sore bitch that cannot walk the next day.
Why?
Jenny's putting the primary definition of smut is matter that soils or blackens.
Yeah.
Thank
And
you,
I
Jenny.
don't want anyone to talk about these books, this genre. I mean, you guys, this is episode 234. At the end of this year, we'll have 235 Sunday episodes. I have dedicated 4 years to this podcast. I've dedicated 7 years of working to this industry. I do not, under any circumstance, want someone to soil or blacken something that I have loved and dedicated so much time, money, and passion to.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me so mad because, and we talked about it in past episodes a little bit, but, like, Amanda came from purity culture. I didn't come from purity culture, but because of my size, I never felt like, I didn't understand what it meant to be desired, to be loved, to be cherished and worshiped. And romance helped me see that. Am I saying it's a how-to guide? Absolutely not. None of this is a how-to guide. But it opened my eyes. It allowed me to look forward and to be like, I am desirable. I am lovable in the body of man. Somebody will love me. And they have, and they've loved me for 26 years. Not this week, though, because with the cold, I'm snoring a lot, and he.
Yeah, but he was sick too, so there was a lot of tension there.
Yeah.
We might be on the way out. He's like, it's getting a little harder. I'm like, fair. So yeah, I in 2025, I hope that word goes the freak away. And I think, and this is political, and I'm just gonna say it, as book bans become more and more prevalent, as we're going into a very conservative role of
Administration
leadership,
life.
it is, you start calling your stuff smut, that's the stuff that's going to get banned. Do you want to have to, show your ID to pick up a book because it's behind the counter in a black plastic bag? Because that's how they have to sell it to you? Like, is
Like in
this
the movie stores when you had to go behind the curtain.
right? Like, is this the life you want? Then keep calling it smut. Because you're just going to make it really easy for the book banners to identify what books need to be gone.
Yeah, I mean, and we're already seeing it with Amazon and Barnes and Noble suppressing anything
Kobo
labeled
Plus.
that way. Oh yeah, that's right, Kobo Plus
It's
too.
all of
So
those online retailers for ebooks. Even I think Apple Book is the only one who hasn't come out and forwardly said it, but all the others, if you get put in the erotic category, you are being suppressed. Okay. Do we have another one? You want me to do it? Does anybody want to? Is there one specific?
Okay. We listen and we don't judge. Romance readers thinking that romance is new in 2020, or that it's spicier now, or with a new one today was that kink equals dark romance. Like,
wait, what? Need
to stop with these hot
wait
takes.
I missed that.
Yeah, kink it happened this
dark
morning.
Romance,
yes, and people are mad, as they should be, about it.
I mean,
yeah.
So the whole romance is new. I think part of this is if we look at the 2020, you know, with quarantine, a lot of people picked up books because we had more time. And at first they were picking up the Bromance Book Club, right? Which is Lissa K. Adams, Fade to Black, Super Low Spice, Almost Women's Fiction.
Yeah.
They're picking up the newer Christina Lawrence, which again, low spice, more like a women's fiction. And then all of a sudden there's this TikTok thing and people are dancing and people are over there talking about books, and the books they're talking about are, you know, trending and going viral and people are just blowing up. And all of a sudden they're like, where have these books been all my life? And I think some of this comes out of maybe their moms were not romance readers. Because I know we often talk about it.
But are these people paying attention to, like, cultural things? Like, You've Got Mail is based on a romance.
But I think that many of them, again, pre-2022, they were only getting their books from libraries and bookstores. The indie books were not in the bookstores. And 50 Shades of Grey was that weird book that your mom read.
Yeah.
So, I did not read that one.
I didn't.
Although she does read everything else that I tell her to, so.
But I get what you're saying, though. Like, it was new to so many people, you know, during the pandemic. And then, like you said, they've gone from these very low spice books to being exposed to, you know, other books on TikTok. And they're just very confused. But
I have to wonder.
Google,
like,
exists. Like,
but
like
also,
it takes 5 seconds to, like, I look up every book, like. I just don't, like, I don't understand how people just don't check things before they spew them out into the world.
My thing is, do these people live under a rock?
Yes.
Like, honestly, like, do they live under rocks? Because, like, this is not, like, nothing, unless it's tech heavy, nothing is new in this world anymore.
Yeah.
Except, okay, so let's think about this. And this is... to be honest, I feel sorry for these new romance readers that are acting like it's brand new, because they are not getting the best work, right? The books that they are in love with, the books that they're reading, the authors they are reading are not the cream of the crop. They're missing the cream of the crop, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But so let's talk about this, though. Okay, so if you have someone that's 22 or 23, in 2010... they would have been 11 or 12. Right. And that is when the iPad and the like e-reader started to come out and make a presence known. I very quickly went from keeping mass market paperbacks everywhere, ditched them all, got my e-reader, and I read all my books on my e-reader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, now we've always been a big book family in my house. Like, books are something I never said no to my kids about. Like, it didn't matter. I always bought books. But I don't think every household is a book family. Like, we were once a week library family.
My Michael, like, his family was not readers. Like, he's not a big reader because of it.
Age 13, I picked up my first Jude Devereaux. For kids at age 13, they would have had to have a phone or their own tablet or their own iPad or something to pick up. If their parent, like so many, went to started reading digitally.
Yeah, so, they're not finding those books in their house like we did,
but, like,
and we're picking them up reading them in the back room like some of us did.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, I took my mom's books. Like, if I was that age, I would have taken her Kindle. like, or her e-reader to see
Oh
like
yeah,
what she was
no.
reading. Oh, I wouldn't have. No,
No
because
way.
my like if
I
my
would
child
have.
if my child touches my Kindle, like I have adult children, guys.
Jeremy doesn't touch my Kindle.
Yeah, Mike
I
Burrier,
know,
other
but
than to
I'm
put
saying,
it.
like, if I was a kid, like, I would have, because I would have, like, went to see what she was reading. I would have looked.
She'd have
And
beat
then I
you.
probably would have read it.
She'd have beat you. I'd have beat you.
No, she wouldn't have, because she would have been like,
Well,
I'm
I think
not
a lot
surprised
of
this is
people are in
happening.
very different homes.
But
And
I.
Heather said, as a teacher, she can confirm that most families don't have books in their home anymore.
Right.
So.
So it's. I think that some of these younger readers that are coming onto the scene right now don't have the rich history. And we talked about it on Friday night at Festivus a little bit. Many of us grew up with the moms that had the brown sack of books that traveled from house to house. You got a new sack every month. You went sometimes to the beauty salon to get it. Sometimes it was the church ladies' luncheon. It just depend, right?
Yeah. We
And
didn't have the brown sack, but we did get the brown box every month of the mail.
well, but my mom had a like a group of ladies that the sack went, like you read your sack and then the new sack it would pass around. And but now with the cancellation of mass market and people not wanting them, we aren't going to share a 15, 16, 17, $20 paperback.
Well, I'm not sharing my paperbacks anyway
No, I
because
don't even read my
nobody is
paperbacks.
opening these.
But do you understand what I'm saying? Like we
Yes,
had
yes,
the
yes.
exposure
Yeah,
from our
that's a
moms
fair point.
with those mass markets. I
We did,
don't
yes.
believe that the newer readers that are anywhere from, 21 to 27, 28 have had that same experience to
Yeah.
find the books that way.
And I can understand that, but I mean, if you find something new, like I don't understand why you wouldn't Google it. Because I remember when, before I had an ebook, if I found a book at the library that I liked, or whatever, I was searching on the internet to find books like it. You know what I mean?
Oh,
Like,
and that's the
I
thing.
do
Like,
that now.
I used
If
to
you
keep a
find a book you
notebook.
like, would you not search like more books by that author? Would you
Yeah, that's what
not
I'm saying.
search more books with that like trope or subject? Like,
I
I
was
that's my thing.
never,
Like,
but I was never happier
the
when I found
searching.
fantastic fiction, but and I could see like a
Yes.
full list in every title and know what title. But that, that's something else that we really felt big in 2024 was the sheer volume of books that authors are releasing. And there are some authors, like Delta's on here. I never worry about a Delta James book not being a full book. And she releases one every 3 weeks, I think. I never worry
It
about Delta.
seems like it.
But there are some authors that have gotten into this habit that release a book every 6 weeks, every month. And one, it's almost nearly impossible to keep up. Delta writes short, so typically I can squeeze her in. But if they're writing 400, 500 page books every time they release a book, I can't keep up with that. I
But
lose track of them.
also, oftentimes, those longer books that are every 6 weeks are not as good as some of those authors' previous work because they're trying to bust out all these books and they're losing, a lot of these authors are losing the quality of book. Like, there are some authors like Delta, like Susan, like who write
They
like
write ahead.
ahead, like. And their quality of book doesn't falter.
And Carrie Ann Ryan does that. But like this year, I
Carrie Ann
really
Ryan, yes,
noticed.
she puts a lot of books out, but she's like way ahead. Like,
But I also noticed, and I know that some of this was personal life stuff, but Sawyer Bennett's books fell off for me this year. Now, the
yeah,
new racing one, I really did enjoy,
but
but.
you figure Sawyer's personal life and personal like grief definitely showed in her writing.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you're going to have that with a lot of authors. I mean, things happen. Life is a dumpster fire right now for a lot of people. So I mean, I think that's going to be reflected in their work, but I think just the sheer volume of authors, the sheer volume of books, it is very hard to keep up. Like I haven't read several of my favorite authors, like some of their new books this year, because I just can't. And I
Well,
read a lot of books and I can't keep up.
it starts to feel
And
overwhelming too. the sheer choice. And I'll be honest, and typically I would read two or three chapters, and if it wasn't catching me, I was DNF and writing off. This year I kind of changed my, I did the soft DNF. Doesn't mean I'm not coming back to it, but it does mean at this moment, this is not the book for me.
Yeah. I did not read as much this year just because there was a lot going on, and like the number of books that I read was definitely lower, but the number of quality books that were available was also lower.
Well, and it just, it gets overwhelming. It gets hard.
And then Jen Ellen points out, I think, which is probably where we're going to segue to the constant mm-hmm. demand from readers yeah. for more.
Let's talk about that. So
yeah.
We listen and we don't judge. The demands of readers to authors, parasocial relationships, and then there's a part two to this.
So there was, I'm in Ivy Lane's reader group, and I actually talked to her about this on the interview also. I don't know if we were on the air or not, but so there was a person in there who basically asked why she doesn't write books faster, like why we can't expect a book. And so I made a comment that every author is different. Some write fast, some write slow. Like some have day jobs, some do not. Like you cannot expect an author to bust out a book in a month just because you want it. Like you have to take into account the fact that these people are human beings who have lives outside of like writing.
Yeah.
Because I got real annoyed by that.
I see that happen in a lot of groups. I'm in a lot of groups on Facebook.
Well, yeah. So bad. And there's the other problem that we have is, you know, people think that they know publishing a lot, especially some of these more rabid readers, influencers, people that all of a sudden feel they're an authority, don't understand how publishing works. So there are authors that, because I recently saw this with Emily Rath, she released a trad pub release that was sapphic, and someone's like, well, aren't you ever going to get back to your hockey? Well, here's something readers don't know, is that oftentimes with a trad pub, you have a cushion on either side of your release that you can't release. Now, that's negotiated. That can be, you know, like debuts, typically it's 3 months before and 3 months after. If it's someone, an author that's been around a long time, has a really good, strong readership, good, strong purchase history, that it can be shortened to like 6 weeks to 1 month. It just really depends. But
that depends on the author and what they're willing to give up too. Cause there are some authors who like they have where there is no waiting period for them. They basically can do whatever they want,
but it's a contract, it's
worked
thing.
Into their contract.
Yeah. It's a contract thing. And I don't know how to educate readers without coming off. And that I definitely have pulled back from social media. One, there were reasons, but also because I felt like I was starting to come off like a know-it-all. The snotty girl that's like, you're an idiot. That's not how it works. Like, I don't want to be that person. The Andrea of Beverly Hills 90210 that like knows everything and everybody. Like, I don't want to be that person, but damn, bitches, you don't know shit. And then authors, you know, like, is it flattering when an author slides into your DM and like offers you a copy of their book or asks you to review their book or wants to be a part of and this is soft. This just happened to Carla. So Carla is reading. She and I are very good friends. I've had her on the podcast. I adore her, right? But she really prioritizes Latinx voices. And she had an author that is on her TBR, but the book's already out. But she had some other arc and promo things that she had to do. She hadn't gotten to that author's books yet to give them a read. She still planned to. She just hadn't got it. And the author didn't give her a copy. Like, she grabbed a copy herself.
Okay, so she spent her money.
I saw her talk about this. I didn't know she actually got the copy herself.
She got it was a KU book. She checked it out. They did not send her a paperback.
Okay.
The author unfollowed her on all social media platforms because she hadn't reviewed her book yet. She originally was in Carla's DMs being like, hey, you know, I thought you were going to review my book and you were going to talk about it. And because Carla hadn't gotten to it yet, she's like, listen, I'm really sorry. I had other commitments that really had to come first, but it's on my list. I'm going to get to it. The author unfollowed her on everything.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
And it's like, listen, I owe you nothing. Like, I try really hard. An author sends me a copy. There are some times I don't get it read in time for a release. Like, I have an arc for Adriana Locke's release that was last week, I think. I haven't read it. It's probably going to be February before I get to it.
But that's the thing. Like, we as bookstagrammers, as reviewers, like, we have lives. Things happen. We get busy. Maybe we actually read the book and we didn't like it and we don't want to review it yet also. But like, it goes both ways. Like, we are also human beings who cannot like drop everything because you want us to.
Yeah. So like, we have seen over the course of the last couple of weeks, people sliding into authors' DMs, feeling that they have the audacity to let them know that there are these errors in their book. Because the author has said, let me know if there's errors. So they tell them and then they offer their services. And authors are offended by this, but you're asking for free labor. Why wouldn't you pitch your service?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I also get it. If they're signing up for an ARC.
Well, but the thing is, if the author states in the book, please message me.
But even on social media, authors will be like, if you see a error, do not report it to Kindle. Please do not report errors to Kindle. Please send me an email. Send me a message. Let me know that there is a problem in error. So then somebody sends them screenshots and says, hey, I noticed this book had 72 proofreading errors. By the way, if you need a proofreader, I'm a proofreader. And I'm not going to lie. I did that with Sarah Bale. Did anything come of it? No. But her last book that I read of hers was so full of errors and typos that it was hard for me to read it. And so I did message her and I said, hey, I just wanted you to know there's a lot of errors in here. I can send you the screenshots that I took. But if you ever need a proofreader, even like as a fast turnover, please let me know. I'd be happy to work something out with you. Crickets. Was I out of line? I don't think so. Because she doesn't want it reported.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, if people report the errors, authors get like torn, like bent out of shape. But it's like, one, like if you're paying for a proofreader, that's good. But if your proofreader is not doing the job, do not continue to pay the same people.
Well, and I think part of it too pay is the for Amazon. Proofreading. Amazon, if you report an error, like they take it as like
quality,
you know, like, and then it needs to be taken down.
Yeah.
So, or they put that little warning that this, you know, this product contains errors and we've received reports. So I understand that. But yeah, I mean, if you don't want them messaging you those kinds of things, then don't ask them to report errors to you. I mean, a lot of authors have a PA say, you know, please let my PA know or something like that. Have a line of defense, you know, in place. I mean, I know that not everybody has one, but in an ARC though, I mean, you have to, like, an ARC is not ready to go to print.
Well, no. And this wasn't an ARC. I didn't have an ARC.
Yours is not.
I borrowed it from KU.
Some of the people complaining about it are from ARC readers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But again, you're inviting them into your DMs.
But also, like, you as an author should want to put your best product out there. And if you're giving, like, publishing a book that has a lot of errors in it, that's not your best product. I probably won't come back to you if there's a lot of errors.
Yeah, no, because I get
you're
that.
Not, like, you as an author are not, like, taking care of your craft.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, what they're doing. My only point was, like, if it's an ARC and you know that this is not a finished copy, then,
they're still
going through proofreads, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, ARCs I usually, like, unless it's, like, a huge thing, I usually don't say anything.
Well, and I'll tell you,
like, unless they ask at the end, like, to send them.
I had an ARC for Carrie Elks. And there was a huge continuity issue in the book. And I caught it. I sent her a message and said, "Hey, Carrie, you have this discrepancy. I just wanted to make sure you knew so you could fix it before the final copy goes out." And she messages back and she's like, "Oh my God, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That missed all our eyes." And she and I went back and forth and I said, "Hey, if you ever need a beta reader or a continuity editor, please let me know. I would love to work with you." And she was like, "Okay, hired. And I was going to do it for like $50 because I love her and I'm going to read her books anyway. So, you know,
yeah,
whatever. But she was like, "No, I'm not going to just pay you $50. But it's these boundaries. Like, I mean, how many times do we see over on Threads, Amanda? And I know, like, do you know how many times a day I sit there on Threads and I'm like, "I can't believe I haven't heard from Amanda yet about this. I can't believe I haven't heard yet from Amanda about this."
I'm trying not to engage with some of it. I'm trying not to make myself crazy. And I know that usually we're going to talk at least.
Right. We're going to have some conversation. Some point,
and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to like immediately respond and be like, "Did you say this?"
So the other thing that I have noticed an uptick on over on Threads, and I think that, again, these are new on the scene authors that haven't been established yet, don't understand. Delta James says it. A lot of authors don't know how it all works and how to be successful. But how many times a week do we see authors say that they read their reviews so that they know how to write a better book the next time?
Yeah.
I mean, multiple times a day we see it.
Friends, that is a mistake.
Yeah. Get yourself like a group of people, get your, you know, peer review if you can't afford
like that's beta readers or whatever,
just a critique partner. Exactly. A critique partner. I mean, something, but yes, I mean, I don't even, if I'm just reading just for fun, like I will go in and put something unhinged on Goodreads. Like it is just, you know, it depends on the day of the week. So
yeah, it's so.
It depends on my mood, what my reviews end up being. Especially if I didn't like the book, you never know what's going to come out.
So segue from that is some demands or some authors and the demands that they are putting on our creators. I'm not going to even lie. I judge every single one of those authors and it quickly makes me not want to work with that author.
I mean,
yeah, that's why my ARC consumption is very small.
Yeah. I mean, I get the majority of mine on NetGalley anymore. Like I have a few teams that I'm still on. They don't require anything of me other than to post a review. But yeah.
Yeah. The teams that I'm on, if they asked more of me, then I would not be on them anymore. And I think I'm only on like two.
And then some of the ones I'm on, they're like, "You don't even have to post one. Like, just let me know what you think."
Okay. And I just think it's out of control. I think that
it is.
Again, authors, they are desperate for this viral moment. They think that if they put all these demand on art creators, they're going to get that moment. And it's just getting out of hand. People have lives. They have jobs. They have families. They have hobbies. Yeah. Some of us want to make pancakes. We don't have time to make 72 influencer videos.
Yeah. I mean, it's unpaid marketing. It's you're paying. I mean, they're asking them to perform things that your PR or marketing agency or team should be doing.
And Bonnie says she feels like some authors don't realize this needs to be treated like a business. You're right, Bonnie. Yes. And this is why I'm excited that she's a client, because we didn't have to have this conversation. I didn't have to say to author Bonnie, "It's a business, sister." She already knows that. Delta, you should meet Bonnie. Bonnie should meet Delta.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So
we can make that happen.
We can make that happen. You know, we're going to keep going for a little bit here. We listen and we don't judge. Book signings have become influencer circles and are not circuses and are not fun anymore. 2024 was the year of bad book signings.
Yeah, and I don't think 2025 is going to be any better from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I think I'm only going to one in 2025, and only because I get to see Becky.
Well, I have three. I have one that's a business trip in March.
That doesn't count.
Down in North Carolina. Well, two are business. I have Columbus exactly with you guys, down. And then I have one in August in Cincinnati, which you should come with me.
I might come with you.
But anyway, I have three signings. And to be honest, like, I don't even go to the ones at my local Barnes & Noble anymore.
Well, because those are a shit show.
They're so disorganized. They're so not well done. And the
my thing is the setup readers is, well, it's just there's so many people packed into a space that's too small.
Yep.
There's such an entitlement aura of a lot of the people that are there. Like, there are some people that are there for the signing that are truly there to meet these authors in person. They are, and like, they want to take the time to talk to these authors, and they want to like have that first like face-to-face meeting with them. But there's such a speed dating feel to it that those people are not getting like the full like experience that they could be. Now, I will fully admit that when we went to Knockout and I was in front of Anna Hackett, I held up that line.
Good for
you. Yes, you did.
And I,
but good for you.
I'm not sorry about it.
Yeah, I know.
It's also because, was Lindsay's best day of her life.
Yeah,
and including the day Lindsay she married was Charlie,
her best life. But Lindsay and Anna's husband, no joke, had like a 10-minute conversation about all these things. And so I was like, okay. I mean, it may not have been 10 minutes, but it was. We stood there for a long time.
Oh, it was totally 10 minutes.
but it's one of those things where like this is somebody who I met through the podcast. I have graciously got to interview her, and it was a great experience. And then getting to see her face to face was like, it's super exciting. So I was taking my time.
Yeah. And I don't think, you don't begrudge people those experiences, but the problem is like when I was at Sweetgrass, like there was no way that they were going to get through the amount of people that they had there to see those authors. Even in a transactional situation where they were, getting people through as much as they could. But like Natasha, there was a ticketed line to see her, and like I was done with everybody else. And like they were like, we have no idea how long it's going to take, because she likes to sit and talk to people for a minute, which is amazing. But then you're getting to the end of the day, and then like they're leaving, and these people haven't seen the author that they came to see.
Yeah.
Well, so, and it's hard.
We've also seen that anybody, no matter what your background is, can plan a book signing and sell tickets, expensive tickets, at big expensive hotels. And it doesn't mean that they have an understanding of festival planning, crowd management, of it, because it's more than an event planning. It's a festival planning.
Just basic layout planning, like planning for like specific authors and like the way that you set up the rooms. Like
Knockout was terrible for the setup.
The way it was set up was horrible. And it just was, but that's the thing. Like you have Joe Schmo off the street being like, I'm going to host a signing, but they don't actually understand how it should happen.
Yeah.
It's like they went to a signing, so they think they know.
And a lot of these signings are a lot of money.
They are.
A lot of money. And it really is starting to feel, these don't feel like reader events anymore. They feel like elite events.
Delta even says it used to be up the readers and authors getting together, and now it's a lot of event planners who are making it all about the money.
Well, and they want the influencers there. They really don't care about the reader. Unless you're coming to make videos and you're going to show your haul and you're going to chat up their event and get them all, they don't care about you. And this is something that we didn't really talk about much, but it goes back to the first topic a little bit. A lot of these event planners, again, don't understand publishing and how it works. So a lot of these authors that have gotten picked up for paperback rights don't realize that the authors cannot sell the books at their tables.
Yeah.
They have to be through a bookstore. And somebody was telling me that there was a signing a couple months ago, one of the last ones, maybe it was Smut Lovers, didn't have a bookstore attached. So Steamy Lit was their bookstore. but still couldn't get in some of the books that they needed for that signing.
Oh.
And so authors were like, well, you have to bring the copies in. Like, you have to buy them and bring them with you, which gets tricky because a lot of authors will have a signing limit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they can only sign so many books. And then that's the thing, too, is they're overselling these events and you have this mass quantity of readers mm-hmm. coming in. And these authors, you know, I mean, they're doing their best because I don't think these are author events either. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no,
they're events.
Well, and I think that they need to be more set up like a trade show.
Yeah.
You know, people need to look at book signings. If you're really bringing in authors and you're making authors pay for spaces, then you need to look at it as like a festival or as a trade show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, because one of the first signings we went to, and Michael was like, I can't believe authors weren't talking you up. Like, you have a podcast. You could talk about their product on your podcast. Like, I can't believe no one else was engaging. And I said, authors don't look at marketing like that. They mm-hmm. don't look at hey, if I give this girl a big stack of books, there's a chance that she's going to talk about it on my podcast. And then I'm going to reach a whole new level of readers. They don't think about that because my follower count to them is only so big. They don't know that it's bigger than what it says.
Yeah. Well, because the numbers that we can prove to them are not very big.
Like, well, if you, that they can they physically want. See right there. Yeah.
For what they want.
But, you know, we hear it all the time from people. Like, I get all my book recs from you. If you talk about it, I read it.
Yeah.
You know, Gloria said this the other day to me. She goes, 2025 is the year I only read the books Becky's read.
Was at Festivus. She's going to make you read books that she wants to read so she doesn't have to DNF them.
Yeah, so you can vet them for her.
You have to vet all of Gloria's books in 2025.
I don't know that I should do that. I don't know. I don't know. That seems like a lot.
It's just a very Gloria thing to say.
It is a very Gloria thing to say. Okay, we're going to talk about two more before we go on and wrap things up. First, because we do not know what is happening with the TikTok ban. Many TikTok book talkers have been moving over to Instagram and they hate it. And they've been very vocal about their dislike of Instagram, that it's flat and it's boring and they aren't interested. So then Instagram said, hey, we're going to be a bunch of bitches. We think you all are stupid and we don't like you, so don't come here. And it's very much this vibe of us versus them versus them, whoever. And all I can say is obviously none of these people are doing it for community. Because
no.
I'll be very honest, we don't have a big following any one place, but our community is rabid and they follow.
Yeah.
If we tell them to do something, they mostly do it unless they're Heather. Heather doesn't do anything we tell her to do.
That's true.
Like, Heather, have you read Maya Banks? Have you read Winterville? Have you read Renna Morgan? No, she's done none of those things.
Just hide behind Heather and let you all go after her first.
Right? Okay, one of the things I really want to see gone in 2025 is the list making.
Oh, about the
I'm judging
calling people out. Yeah.
I'm judging every person that ever makes a list. Like a list of authors that behave badly or a list of influencers who did something wrong or
I mean, honestly,
this person supports this person.
To do something that somebody disagrees with. Like just because you think they're behaving badly doesn't necessarily mean they are behaving badly. And there are a lot of people that are behaving badly all the time.
Everywhere.
There are. I mean, and there are things that I'm not going to put money, time, or attention onto. There's a signing that's next spring. I have no interest in ever associating to that signing. It's gotten a bad rap. Their behavior has been off the charts. Am I making it a list? Am I sitting here saying, don't go to this place? No, I'm not. Not at all. It's just not on my list. But all of this list making has a McCarthy era feeling to it. And I think that it's going to blow up. And that's not what community is about.
It's that whole cancel culture chaos that like, it's like every 5 seconds there's somebody new to cancel.
Yeah.
Like, well, I mean, you pointed it out too when you said the people that are running around using the word smut, they're going to find themselves on a list.
Yeah.
Like it feels very, like you said, it feels very McCarthyism. It feels very like, it feels like bad things are going to happen. So it's like, you know, let's just not engage with those kind of lists. And if something's not for you, it's not for you. I mean, we have a safe community. If somebody is wondering about something, they can ask without us making a list of people or things not to
Well,
associate with.
and a lot of people in our community are asking the questions because they're curious.
Yeah.
Like they don't know, so they want either some clarification or some justification on why they feel the way they feel. And like them asking the questions, like we don't necessarily know which way they're feeling or thinking, and that's fine. Like we don't have to know, but they're not afraid to ask us the questions at the same time.
So exactly.
I had some fun facts. I'm going to save those for our next episode, for our year-end episode.
Okay.
So we are going to go into Project Backlist. We have
Project
2 weeks
Backlist.
left of Project Backlist. And this week's Project Backlist author is author Delta James. We are talking about her series, Mercenary Masters. Fun facts about Delta James. She picked up and moved from the Pacific Northwest to North Carolina with about 3 weeks' notice to anyone. She saw it as
Capricious.
yes, capricious.
Why
But
did
I
you just
saw it.
say it?
I can't say it tonight.
Sorry.
She saw it as necessary. My life kept coming apart every 3 to 4 years, so I decided I needed to make a break and start over. It was in North Carolina that she finished and published her first novel. So, take the chance. Do the thing that's scary. Because typically the rewards are going to be big. Can you imagine our world without a Delta James?
No.
No, me either. Delta lives with her BFF, an alpha reader, Chris, which has been a huge boon to her writing. They share a home with their four Basset Hound girls, all of whom are named for characters in books. Three from the Wayward Mates, Roz, Ava, and Skylar, and one from Mercenary Masters, Olivia. The three from Wayward Mates sleep with Chris, and the one from Mercenary Masters sleeps with Delta. I love that. I
That is
love that.
adorable. They're cute.
So I read.
Also, if you got her Christmas card, it's a Basset and it's adorable.
I did get it. I did. Chris, he, my Chris loves the Delta James Christmas cards. They always stay up on our magnetic board year round. I don't know why. He's 21. He just likes her Christmas cards.
They're fun,
They
and they
are
have a puppy
fun.
on them.
So I read Bulldog. It is BDSM romantic suspense. It is spicy. Synopsis of Bulldog. This is the third installment in the Mercenary Master series. The novel centers on Lord Nigel Bulldog Peterson, Pedersen,
Peterson.
Peterson, a titled gentleman and member of the Home Office, known for his dominant nature, and Olivia Miles, a strong-willed UN translator. Their relationship begins when Olivia resorts to an underhanded tactic during a fencing match against Nigel. In response, Nigel decides to teach her a lesson, leading to a dynamic where Olivia becomes his submissive. As their relationship deepens, Olivia is drawn into Nigel's world of dominance and submission, leading to a passionate and intense romance. You guys.
Delta's a fan of the lessons.
She likes lessons.
She does.
This romance was captivating. It was well-written plot, suspenseful twists, and an excellent world building. I really liked Olivia. I really, really liked her. Chemistry, sparks fly off the pages. There's that feeling of adventure, intrigue, conspiracies, like the looming danger, the big bad. Lots of action, definite power plays with the BDSM and steamy scenes, but it's all very consensual. The characters are well developed, and the secondary cast adds depth to the narrative. It was a really quick, easy read, too. So if you've got to finish some books before the end of the year, I totally recommend Bulldog by Delta James. Okay, so that was Project Backlist.
It's that time.
It's that time
For
for
book
Book of
of
the
the
Week. It's Book of the Week time. Leah, what's your Book of the Week?
My book of the week is A Sinner Saint by Kylie Kent. It is book four in her DeBellis crime family. This one actually was a little harder to get through. Check your trigger warnings because there's some heavy stuff in this one. But it was, I actually really enjoyed this series a lot. But yeah, it was good. It's
Okay.
Vin's book. He's the youngest.
Okay. Amanda, what's your book of the week?
My book of the week is Until Vax by Aurora Rose Reynolds. I forget what number we're on in the Until
It's
Him Her
14.
series. Is it 14? Okay.
Mm.
So this is Vax's book. He's one of the Mason kids. And he is at the bar and he sees a girl across the room at the bar and he has the boom moment. And then he realizes that it's his best friend's younger sister who he hasn't seen in years. And his best friend who also works for him. So there's that whole dynamic going on of the little bit of, forbidden situation. And then she runs into some danger and is staying next door to him. So there's the neighbors factor, which I absolutely love.
Well, but then he moves her in with him,
And then
so
he just, all of a sudden she's
because he's a
living with him.
Mason.
Yeah, because he's a Mason. And of course, it all works out in the end, but I need them. I'm gonna have to tell Aurora, I need them to move off that street. It stresses me out. All the bad things that are happening on the street that they live on.
They need to move.
They need to move.
So my book of the
It was
week,
really good.
I'm glad you liked it. I really liked it. I had the honor of
Yeah.
proofreading it. I really liked it. It was
Yeah, it's been one of my favorites in that series.
I'm really sad that there's only one book left.
No, she's named the next generation, so I expect books for those people as well. I'm just saying.
There's a lot of them. I don't think that's gonna happen.
Whatever.
You
We
guys are
can pick
next
a
level.
couple.
Okay. My book of the week is Cross the Line by Kelly Jameson. It's an opposite attract teams, sister roommates type situation. Our heroine is Mabel and our hero is Ben. Ben is socially shy. He likes to be in the background. He's not big on being forward. And Mabel is a librarian and loves little kids and wears all the funky, wacky librarian styled outfits.
Like Miss
And
Frizzle.
yes, and Ben doesn't quite know what to do with her. And she moves in to sleep on her brother's couch because she's had a breakup and they connect. And I'm going to tell you, Kelly Jameson is back. She struggled with writing. And I know that things have been rough for her for the last like 18 months, but this book, I felt like I was reading Kelly of the Chicago Aces. So I'm super excited for all of you to read it. It does come out in January. Okay, Patreon update. First of all, you guys, I sent a notice out for Patreon. We adjusted some tiers. Make sure you check out patreon.com/bookcaseandcoffee for all those updates over there. Thank you to Swag Pack sponsoring authors for December. That is author Delta James and author Mary Carr. You'll be getting those packages along with January swag in early January. For a list of books we talked about, we didn't talk about any books other than Books of the Week. Any books we talked about on this episode, you can find on our on-the-shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. We are off for the next 2 Wednesdays, but then come back on January the 4th, 8th, and we'll be back. And we are reading 9-Month Contract by Amy Doss. Don't forget to follow us on social media for more updates. Join our community of romance enthusiasts over on our Discord. And if you love this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform or right here on the YouTubes and share it with your friends. Your support helps us bring more exciting content to you every week. Amanda, Leah, thank you so much for giving us your hot takes.
We listen
Thanks for
and we
having
don't
us.
judge. We listen and we don't judge. Until next time, everybody.
Happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance.
If
If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.